Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here on such a hot day. Again, welcome to the press conference following the Chiefs of Defense meeting, the second one of this year. First, as is usual, you will hear statements by General Pavel, chairman of the NATO Military Committee, followed by General Scaparotti, Supreme Allied Commander Europe, and General Mercier, Supreme Allied Command Transformation. After the statements, we will open up for Q&As. Without further ado, General Pavel, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me begin this press conference by giving you an overview of the outcomes of second Chiefs of Defense meeting in 2017. It is exactly these meetings where the Chiefs of Defense have the opportunity to assess the current and future work, engage in an open exchange of views, and offer additional guidance and recommendations. Translating political objectives into a military reality is at the core of the work we do. What is also crucial is that the military advice we provide is clear, concise, and importantly able to deliver the desired strategic effects. Our work today will assist our heads of state and government in their meeting on the 25th of May and defense ministers in June to make deliberate and considered decisions. So what did we discuss today? We started off with a very fruitful exchange of views with the Secretary General on ongoing NATO priorities and work strands. Our first strategy session had the Chiefs of Defense look at the threats and challenges to the south of the alliance's borders. We discussed how to further enhance NATO's role in fighting terrorism, including potential NATO membership in the global coalition to counter ISIL, which will be one of the key topics for the heads of state and government meeting. We also addressed ways to move forward with the implementation of projecting stability, including remaining fully committed to the stability and security of the Western Balkans, and the next possible steps with regard to NATO's involvement in Iraq. The Chiefs of Defense reiterated their strong support to NATO's projecting stability activities as part of the broad efforts of the international community and the need to work closely with our Mediterranean Dialogue and Istanbul Cooperation Initiative partners, with the European Union and other international organizations. The role the hub for the South will play in coordinating these activities is very important. It will improve our abilities to anticipate crises in the region and respond to them. During the meeting with our partners in the Resolute Support format, discussions centered on recommendations for 2018 and beyond, including on the continued requirement for a flexible and conditions-based approach due to the volatile security situation. The Chiefs of Defense emphasized their long-term commitment to train, advise, and assist the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces, including through the support to the four-year NDSF roadmap. The Afghan security forces are faced with a challenging security environment. They continue to be tested, but they also continue to endure. It is unquestionable that a stable Afghanistan is in everybody's interest, and not just for regional stability. NATO will continue to support all initiatives which will help achieve this objective. In our final sessions of the day, we first completed the strategic security overview, which included Russia. The Chiefs of Defense then developed recommendations on capability development and resource requirements to continue to underpin NATO's current and future tasks, operations, missions, and activities relating to both defense and deterrence and projecting stability. Finally, the Allied Chiefs of Defense took the opportunity to note an update on the NATO command structure adaptation. With that introduction, let me now pass the floor to strategy commanders, and we'll start with Secretary General Scaparotti. Mike, over
Thank
to you.
Peter. Okay. Well, thank you, and I appreciate you staying this evening for the news for the press conference here, and I appreciated the attendance of the CHODs today. These conversations are always profitable when we get together. I want to express my gratitude for the contributions from across the alliance to NATO operations and to the defense of Europe. I also appreciate how difficult it is in these complex times to meet all the requirements in the light of high demand and continued resource constraints to provide all the forces that we require. Today, the CHODs discussed as laid out during the Warsaw Summit, we must do more to ensure a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace. This includes a change in our posture, in our mindset, and our ability to respond at the speed of conflict. Clearly, NATO is changing. We are adapting the alliance to respond to different approaches to modern warfare, which is extremely complex, potentially vast in scale, scope, and intensity. And we continue to work as allies to succeed in this significant transition. To underscore that, strategic unity keeps NATO strong. National, bilateral, and collective alliance efforts must be integrated and mutually reinforcing. This is fundamental to our success and to address the evolving strategic security environment. And NATO nations are responding nationally, multilaterally, collectively, through the readiness of their own forces, enhanced forward presence, tailored forward presence, the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force, Baltic Air Policing, enhanced air policing. There's a number of activities, to just name a few. Looking forward, we must maintain a strategic long-term view. We must have a sense of urgency coupled with a sense of endurance. Simultaneously, we must find the right way to make the best use of our current capacity to secure allies for the challenges we face. Our instruments need to offer us flexibility. Utility across potential applications is critical, and we must be based on a requirement in terms of both quality and quantity. This is not simply desirable for the sake of efficiency. It's a requirement that we are adaptable and able to respond at speed. NATO is charged to be ready and responsive to the new and continually evolving security environment. We must continue to set the conditions and invest now to ensure European stability in the future. And with that, I'll hand it over to my colleague, SAC-T, Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening. As far as the adaptation is concerned, I provided and we discussed with a shot an update of the NATO defense planning process, which is aimed at meeting NATO's level of ambition regarding the capabilities that will help us face the challenges and threats now and in the foreseeable future. Since our last meeting in January, we reached a significant milestone in achieving 100% apportionment and acceptance on NATO capability targets by the 28 allies and Montenegro. These targets are based on the military requirements translated directly from the political guidance, and they are based on the principles of fair burden sharing and reasonable challenge, which means that no ally is asked to provide capabilities beyond its reach. And they reflect the agreed minimum capability requirement targets against the level of ambition defined by NATO. And of course, they take into account the new strategic environment today and again in the foreseeable future. With this in mind, that the credibility of our posture is based on the resolve of the nations, but this is based on the delivery of the appropriate capabilities that we have defined in the NATO defense planning process. Thank you.
Thank you, sirs. The floor is now open to your questions. If you could please state your affiliation when asking the question. Julian?
Julian Barnes with the Wall Street Journal. Question for General Scaparotti and then one for General Pavel. General Scaparotti, there's been discussion about whether the United States would ask NATO for more forces in Afghanistan. I wonder, to what extent was that discussed? To what extent is NATO meeting the current requirements? And what do you think the advantage of additional forces would be? And General Pavel, I wonder what you can tell us about your counterterrorism defense capacity building discussions today. Is there an appetite for NATO to do more in Iraq, say, and is that, you know, are we talking, you know, just a small increase, or could this potentially be hundreds of NATO trainers in Iraq? Thanks.
Yeah, Julian, thank you. First of all, as you know, the United States hasn't made the decision yet on the troop strength for the United States. That fact was discussed among the Chads, so we didn't get into specifics or the United States' probable troop strength. We did talk about the needs of the commander. I would answer specifically your question about CJSOR. We haven't completely filled the requirements that have been approved within NATO to this point. And as a, you know, as a commander as well, it would certainly be helpful to fill that CJSOR. What it would provide us is the train and advise and assist capability, particularly the advisors, and the strength that's needed to do a better job. And I can tell you from my experience there, I think that would be a significant benefit to fill those out across the battlefield and with the units that exist today in the Afghan Army.
On NATO and counterterrorism, I think there is a tendency to believe that we start from a blank sheet of paper. I think it's worth of reminding that NATO is contributing to a fight against terrorism for now many years. The very operation in Afghanistan has been launched after a terrorist attack on the United States. NATO is also contributing to the fight against terrorism through training of local forces, through defense capacity building in these countries to help them to better face terrorism at home. NATO allies are all members of the global coalition against ISIL, against terrorism. And now the discussion is if NATO is to become a member of that coalition. The decision is pending for the heads of state and government meeting, and we discussed it, and the chiefs of defense recommendation is that there is a merit for NATO becoming a member of that coalition. If NATO is to step up their efforts in Iraq by individuals or tens or hundreds, I will not tell you at this point. But there is a general agreement that NATO can and should do more, especially by stepping up efforts in training, capacity building, institution building, exercises to increasing home capabilities. That means this kind of activities where NATO has not only good reputation, but also a lot of expertise and experience.
Gentleman in front.
From the Arabian News Channel, I have a question to General Pavel. Daesh, according to some Iraqi officials, is about to be defeated. Maybe it's a matter of weeks. You said in the presentation of the press conference that potentially NATO could be a member of the coalition, anti-Daesh coalition. Will that be late if Daesh is defeated? Maybe this membership is. It's a bit late, or you expect seriously that Daesh is moving to Syria and possibly Iraqi fighters, mainly those militia, whether they are supported by Iran, directed by Iran, influenced by Iran, move to Syria and then maybe do justify the membership of NATO and more involvement of NATO forces in the war against Daesh.
Let me start by saying that we do not understand terrorism only as Daesh. Terrorism, obviously, is much broader, and countering terrorism is not just about defeating Daesh. And even defeating Daesh, we can distinguish between let's say, physical defeat of the elements, but it doesn't say anything about defeating the ideology. So this will be a long-lasting fight that will not end by taking Mosul and Raqqa. I think this fight will go on a much broader front, both military, but also economic, social, political, religious, and it will be a long-time activity.
Yes, please, the lady over there.
Thank you, Alix Rekat. I work for AFP. I wanted to ask you, given the information we have from the other side of the Atlantic, do you think it's still safe to share information with the U.S. administration now that there has been talk about President Trump sharing some information with his Russian counterpart lately when he met him, Mr. Lavrov, in Washington? Thank you.
I'm afraid I cannot comment on that because I don't know the nature of information that was shared, and it would be very unfair to speculate.
Yes, gentleman right over there, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Robin Emmett from Reuters. Question to General Pavel. On EFP, there's been some concern that in Poland the generals have resigned because they're not happy with the way the Polish army is deploying its tanks and moving some of its heavy equipment away from the border. I wondered, is that something that's been discussed at NATO? Is that, do you share any concerns about that? Thank you.
On Polish general's resignation, I can't comment. It's a national and a national affair, and I don't want to interfere in it. But it's not related to EFP. For EFP, I think it's better for Saker to address because up to now it's progressing very well. Mike.
And I'll say that, again, it's not for us to comment on that about the general officers, but I will comment in the sense that that's never been a topic that's been raised to me or been discussed with me. I was just in Poland a couple of weeks ago to look at EFP in particular. It's falling into place very well there. The integration both within the Polish defense plan and with the other allies in NATO, I think it's working quite well. So I was pleased. I know the Poles were pleased with the initiation of the battle group there in Poland.
Lady in the back, please.
Thank you. Irina Sommer, Ukrainian news agency Union. I have a question for everybody who can answer, because I do know that you have also meeting with your Ukrainian colleagues, and after which he wrote on his Facebook page that his colleague offered him several interesting ideas how to resist Russian aggression and how to build up Ukrainian army. Can you please tell us what it was about, this meeting? Thank you.
Oh, well, it's quite an easy answer because Ukrainian Chod was present to our Resolute Support mission. Because Ukraine is our partner in Afghanistan. And that was the only subject of discussion. We haven't discussed anything related to our problem with Russia.
Yes, please.
Jim White with USA Today. Just to follow on the question about Iraq, is in addition to potentially upping the number of advisors and trainers or so forth, is it also possible that NATO may in coming years assume command and control of the anti-ISIS mission in Iraq, not unlike what's the relationship with Afghanistan now?
Let me tell you that we are in NATO discussing broader frameworks of counterterrorism as well as projecting stability. And Iraq, as being now a country that is torn with internal conflict, is a country that is not stable. And we will focus our attention on all countries that need to improve stability. Within that framework, we will conduct a number of activities to support all these countries, including Iraq. So we can expect that it will be a long-lasting activity, a long-lasting partnership with Iraq, as well as with many other countries in the region. But no, I don't see it necessarily as a kind of mission similar to Resolute Support.
I have Brooks over here.
Yes, Brooks Signer, Jane's Defense. I have two questions, one for you, General Pavel, and one for you, General Mercier. First for you, regarding your review of NATO's C2 system, C2 structure in order to react faster to hybrid threats and others, is the goal to better use the C2 system the way it is right now, or do you seek additional command posts and assets to do that? Second question, you said all the allies support the new capability requirements to meet these threats and challenges, but it will still be many years before the new defense spending by the allies is there to support most of those requirements. Before then, don't you think that you should step up the pressure for real smart defense sharing and pooling and sharing on a very wide, fast, and large scale before then? Thank you.
Okay, let me start with a very broad introduction, because now NATO command structure is in the hands of strategic commanders. But the security situation is very dynamic, it's developing quickly. So it would be strange that NATO command structure and the whole NATO doesn't adapt accordingly. So we have to look at to what extent current NATO command structure responds to all the requirements of today and especially of tomorrow. And that's why we have now that functional assessment that will then lead to some adjustments. We have divided it into two phases. One short term, where the strategic commanders suggested some minor adjustments to optimize the structure. And in the long run, we will or they will propose some adjustments to the structure. The basic principle is that we will make maximum use of existing structures, not to come up with an entirely new structure, but we can expect that there will be some new proposals. I will leave it to strategic commanders.
Yeah, I think we're taking a very deep look at this, given the change in the environment. So, you know, our instructions between Denny and I is let's not restrict ourselves. Let's look at the environment that we have and into the future, and design the command and control that we need. And you know, I would, for instance, you know, we have recognized a new domain in cyber. That requires, in the short term, as he said, some changes that we can make to address that. But it also requires probably some adaptation within our command and control structure, because that cuts across everything. So that's just one example. But this is needed, and I'm excited.
Is that a euphemism for new command posts, whatever they are?
No, it's not. I mean, we're gonna build the command structure, strategic to tactical, that we believe we need for the purpose of the environment. So I'm not looking for growth necessarily. I'm looking to get it right.
Yeah, and I cannot agree more with what Peter and Mike said about the command and control structure. The NATO is the only international organization that has a military, very robust command and control structure. But the complexity of the environment leads us to permanently adapt it. And it has been done in the past. And as Mike mentioned, it's not a question of reopening everything. This is just a question of implementing the functions in accordance to the new environment, cyber, for instance, and others. And that leads to the second question, the question of smart defense. We will continue to encourage any multinational initiative, and it's not limited to smart defense, in order to provide as fast as possible to provide the right capabilities to meet the level of ambition that has been set out by NATO. And smart defense is a way to provide some of these capabilities, or to train together, or to provide things. But we have...
There's very little to share.
But we have other multinational initiatives that are very interesting, because the NATO defense planning process is not only focused on equipment. And this is the value of this process, again, that makes NATO unique, because we are building a force. When I say a force, it's as equipment, this is the units, this is the number of ammunition, this is the level of readiness of each unit, and how we do that. And we have, for instance, a concept that has been developed by Germany, which is a framework nation concept, in which one nation can aggregate other nations around in order to provide a level of force that only one nation cannot do. For instance, a nation may not be able to provide a division, but together, ensuring the framework with other nations, they can provide a division. And this is, we have a range and a series of multinational initiatives that will help us, based on the full capacity of our nations, meet the level of ambition much quickly than we did before. And I would like to add something, because this is something we are working on now, is providing certain capabilities will take time, but there are other capabilities. I'm thinking again on cyber information technology capabilities that require very quick procurement processes, which is not possible today in NATO, but we are working on that, because we will need to adapt our processes in order to be sure that we can keep up with a very fast pace of innovation of certain technologies.
I had a question before in the front row. Is it still overtaken? Yes, please.
I'm Laurent Barthélémy from Agency France Press. General Nicholson has said I think it was 3 months ago, that he needed a few thousand more troops in Afghanistan. Can you tell us what is the timeline for a decision on this request? Isn't there some kind of emergency, given that the fighting season has already begun in Afghanistan, or is it something that can wait for a few months?
Yeah, he's done a review and provided a request. And as you noted, his request is to fill, at a minimum, fill the CJ SOAR, the requirements. And I would tell you, you know, from a military perspective, the sooner that we can provide him his shortages, the better. And here in NATO, we think this will be considered here very soon. This is the normal period. He's got it in. We're about to have a heads of state meeting. I think it'll be considered before too long.
Any more questions? One last question, if there is one. Over there, please.
I'm Marcus Weisgerber with Defense One. People are going to ask why, after 15 years in Afghanistan and Iraq, that more troops are needed. So what is the argument that you've said earlier that you're leaning toward NATO being part of Iraq? What is the argument you're going to give to ask for your political leaders as to why they should support?
I'd like to address it from going back a bit. I've been a commander in Iraq and in Afghanistan multiple times now. And I would tell you, if you look at Afghanistan, it's a very good question. But, you know, it's one that, as I went in the surge, I followed a year after the surge. You know, as a commander, I estimated that we could probably turn the fight over to the Afghan forces around 2014. That's about what we did. So I guess what I'm saying is we know this is a long fight here. This is going to take time, and it's going to take time to build a military in Afghanistan who now has the fight, but then has the capacity to sustain that and, you know, bring the stability that's needed to bring the Taliban to negotiation. I have confidence we can do that. Our objective is in Afghanistan to ensure that we have a stable government that's no longer a safe haven. And I would say to you, we have to attain that. If we think we can leave, we will find we're back, because we're fighting a global terrorist. We're fighting global terrorists today, and that will be another place that they will use to launch attacks. So we can succeed, and I think we must succeed.
Does NATO have the will?
Yes.
Does NATO have the will to do this sort of a generational war?
I believe it does. NATO has been around a long time. And we tend to focus on, you know, somewhat of the differences in the discussion of the 28. That's one of the things you see in an alliance. But I would tell you, when you look at the product today, a safe and secure Europe, since post-World War II and its ability to come together when we need to be together for threats like we're doing today and the challenges today, I'd say yes, it does. And I think it does have the will.
Thank you again for coming to this Scholz press conference. This is now concluded. Thank you very much, sirs.